In many ways, Buddhism is an education and a study of craving and wanting. And that's such a broad word that it can be quite misunderstood. So let's say you're walking from the kitchen to here. The two doors are closed here, and someone is carrying a full tray of water, and you want to help them. So you open the door and they can get through. So no problem. As they go through, they say to you, "Well, it took you a long time, didn't it?" All right? And so rather than getting the compliment, you get the insult. You slowpoke. So now you're holding the door open, and what was that about? And you have a feeling which is unpleasant. So with contact as condition, sound, and maybe face, there is feeling. And the feeling in this case is, it's not just sound. Sticks and stones will break your bones, but names will never hurt you. Rubbish. And so you're affected in an unpleasant way. So if you're really on the game, you hold the door and you feel the unpleasantness. It arises, it ceases. Now, if you really, you might have to hold your door for 10 minutes there. But normally this does not happen. Normally you let the door go and your mind takes off with et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? It gets engaged with a feeling of displeasure because that's not something that you want. So craving arises, and the craving was, I don't want this to happen. And then a sense of self arises from that, a storyline, a narrative, and suffering. All right? So when we talk about wanting and craving, the problematic part that we're looking at is when it is a cause for suffering. So I want to travel to Thailand. I've got some money, I've got some time, I've got some friends. I go to Thailand. It's perfectly normal, fine. I get to the airport, all the flights have been canceled. Right? And my first thought, what a stupid idea, going to Thailand. Right? Now, so now the inputs are moment by moment unpleasant. Right? Flight's been canceled. I've had that, like as a monk. Flight gets canceled and I spend a night in an airport because I got no money, right? So there's a lot of unpleasantness going on there. And each iteration of unpleasantness can create craving. But if I'm mindful, then I just know unpleasantness is this way and it ceases, it falls away. Right? So when we're really looking at craving, it's really more like the moment-by-moment process of dependent origination, how it works moment-by-moment. And suffering as a moment-by-moment existential problem rather than a larger issue. So it's like in that context. But let's say I've never owned a cell phone, and someone gives me a cell phone, and then I've been perfectly content to just sit in an airport and look at people. Now I've got the cell phone, and now, a cat video. Whatever you get into. Right? And then I put it down again, and then I'm bored. Because now my life has been stimulated in such a way that I want to go out into sense objects. Right? And the opposite of not having an object to stimulate me now becomes unpleasant. Whereas before it was neutral, maybe, it's hypothetical. Now it's become unpleasant because I want heightened excitement. So then look at something else, and look at something else. And, you know, after a while, I can't put the damn thing down. It owns me. And so on and so forth. So then you can see how habits arise in kind of dependencies or addictions. Those are the extremes. So when people like ask questions, well, what about ambition? Like if I'm a student and I want to study architecture and do that, fine, you can do something, go for it. But as you're doing it, notice all the suffering that comes and goes, and see if you can also use the project of getting an architectural degree as a project of understanding why you suffer, as opposed to, you know, the end of suffering is an architectural degree, which we know is absurd, those of who, you know, if you've lived for a few years. So it can sound like you shouldn't want anything, but that's a kind of absolute. It's more around the not understanding. So the word we use is tanha, or craving. And craving in Nepali always implies ignorance, not understanding clearly. So let's say I'm at the door, and I've opened the door for this very blunt person, insensitive beast, who walks by. Now, if I've been practicing for the last 2 years, every instance of aversion that comes up, I'll make it conscious. I have a great advantage, right? Because now, I've seen this territory before. And maybe also if I've, I really bear witness to it and worked off a lot of those tendencies, then that stimulation there, maybe it's no big deal because I've put in the work. If, however, I have tended to, each time something like an insult like that happens to me, I've tended to run into thought and blame and unfairness, and it's unjust, and then I've compounded that with self-disparagement because I'm a good Buddhist and I shouldn't feel that way, you can see how just one little trigger could set off a whole bunch of stuff, because that's what the mind is used to doing when that trigger is there. So each instance in this case of a reaction to the unpleasant, of not wanting the unpleasant, is both an opportunity and a responsibility, because if you don't, you're going to get it, you know, it's like compounded interest. You don't get away with anything in some way. So there's a kind of imperative in your own consciousness. No, this is important. Pay attention to it. It's not about this person. I'm actually more concerned about liberating the mind from this. You really make it important. And the more I think you do this sense of awakening to the way things are, it feels this way, the more those untoward things where you get, what do you call it, blindsided by life. You've got the equipment, as we say, that the practice clicks in. But if one's never done that, one's just a victim to little things like that. No big deal at all. So craving is and wanting is, it's a kind of study. And the study comes, again, from, if you use the Four Noble Truths, comes from the just any sense of lack. So let's say I'm discontent or conflict or friction. So then I'm in the airport with my newly donated, given, what do they call it, cell phone? And then I noticed that. Well, I used to be able to just sit in the airport and look at people. It was quite interesting. Now I just, okay. So then I turn off the cell phone. And then I said, I think I'll just, you know, I've got 6 hours to the next flight, which is typical for me, in Hong Kong or somewhere. And then I said, I'm going to use this now for half an hour. I'm just going to use this situation of nothing to do to observe the craving to distract. Right? And so after 5 minutes, I realized it was a bad mistake, and I turned it back on. And I watched 2 cat videos. You know how discipline is, don't you? So then, no, wait, come on, let's give this a go. And then, you know, I have enough sort of I'm kind of interested. And then there is this, and what arises is craving for some habitual object. Oh, I see. There it is. It's the wanting. And I stay with the wanting, and the wanting ceases. And it comes up again, it ceases, comes up again, it ceases. And I then, you know, I have a better relationship to my cell phone. But also I understand just the fundamental characteristic of the mind wanting to go outside into objects. So how did it go? The mind going outside into objects is suffering, is the cause. The mind going outside into objects is the cause. The result of the mind going outside into objects is suffering. And you switch Four Noble Truths around. The mind knowing the mind is the path, the result of the mind knowing the mind is the end of suffering. So you can see, so I'm sitting in the airport and feeling, I've gotten through the anxiety now, I've gotten through, you know, I'm there on time and all that, gotten through the traffic jam, gotten through security, and let's say this is Chicago. Have you ever been to Chicago airport? Don't do it. It's terrible. I've been there for hours and hours. So I've gotten through all that. I get there. So now I'm just kind of feeling what I feel. And then there's 2 more hours left or whatever. And then I said, okay, I'm gonna use this to look at this need to go into objects. And just maybe like take the whole space of the airport. And it's what space feels like, and there are objects. Because that, you know, Chicago's never spacious, actually. It's the Ottawa airport's very spacious. So I just, space. So even that, like looking at people, which I think we all enjoy, right? People watching is great fun. But even that, I can just consider space. Quite interesting. And you look at people and do, so you use that time as a way of, I think, just reinforcing this sense of the mind knowing the mind and the mind not needing objects. You can engage with objects, but you don't have to. You can just be at peace with this kind of non-engagement, which doesn't mean you miss your flight. And what was your problem, sir? Why did you miss the flight? Oh, I was in space. So it is, you know, Buddhism, like Theravada Buddhism, really addresses, its methodology is suffering, attachment to wanting, craving, and the abandonment of the craving, and to understand that in whatever way. So what I'm trying to do when I teach, you notice I'll just drop a word in. So I'm just trying to nudge people to non-desire. So like this morning, like I just said, what if you care for the breath? You know, so you get this, oh yeah, what do I care for it? And it feels better, doesn't it? So then you get like a sensitivity. Oh yeah, that feels like the path. Because sometimes the words, if you try to apply the words, it gets too intellectual, but at a kind of felt, intuitive level, yeah, it feels right, doesn't it? It feels balanced, okay, so I'll work with that. And so then your language becomes not analytical or judgmental or critical, it becomes suggestive, like just a nudging. And language is beautiful that way. You just have to find your own words. So I use the words that work for me. So we're talking with one of the folk at the last interview, the words say uncertainty creates anxiety. Oh, okay, so that doesn't work, fine. But to get the idea, you know, what are we pointing to? Finger pointing at the moon or looking at the moon, at the finger. So if the finger doesn't work, fine. So what kind of language nudges you in that direction? And then you'll find as you develop meditation, you know how to do that, you know. Just pop a word in, just a little word. So that, I kind of do that for you, right? But if you see the principle, then that, I think, is what we mean by vitakka vijara in the factors of samadhi. So language can enslave you into self-narratives, or language can really be brilliant in just a little bit here and there. Or your language can be loud too. Don't do that. That's crazy. I mean, that's good language too sometimes, if it's going to be hurtful. So, Theravada is very much an education in that way, an education in suffering and the end of suffering, and desire is so important. It's much misunderstood because it sounds sort of an absolute that thou shalt not desire, and if you don't desire anything, you'll be happy. Good luck. You know, it's much more subtle than that. So when there is discontent, that you make that conscious and then see, what is it? So then, like words like receptivity, non-becoming, all that's the language that works for me. I don't know how well it works for you. All right, shall we do some sitting?